Welcome to Paw Print Academy, your blueprint to raising better dogs. My name is Ryan, and I am your host, alongside my co-host, Brianna.
Hi.
And together, we're bringing you real-world training insights built on leadership, structure, and proven methods. But this show is a lot more than just teaching your dog to sit or stay. It's about building trust, creating calmness, and becoming the kind of leader that your dog truly needs. We do that with our three-pillar method of trust, obey, and perform. Thanks for being here on this journey with us. Let's get started. All right, episode 5, body language and tone, communicating beyond words. Welcome to the podcast tonight, Paw Print Academy, episode 5. We're crushing it.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Okay, the recap on how this works is this is a podcast related to dog training that is done with real life clients on the line. It's done in one take. From beginning to end, live, recorded live with real life clients on the line. So tonight we're talking about body language. The core idea behind tonight's leadership call for Top Dog Training and the Paw Print Academy podcast is that dogs read body language and tone far more than the words that we speak. And clear, consistent, clear and consistent nonverbal communication builds stronger leadership and trust in us from our dogs. Mm-hmm. Case in point, when we say things all throughout the day, when does the dog know when to listen to us and when to tune us out? Because 98% of the language that we use, the dog's going to tune out.
Yeah.
And they have to because they don't speak English and we babble all throughout the day. We're on the phone, we're watching the TV, we're listening to podcasts maybe. And there are things going on all throughout the day that the dog's hearing. They have no idea what is going on.
Yeah.
And if they don't learn to tune that out, that's where you get dogs that are like super anxious because they're like, I have no idea what you're saying.
Right. They're trying to figure it out.
Right.
All the time.
So we typically, even though dog senses go in order of scent, then hearing, then visual, right? Mm-hmm. In order of strength. And we typically condition our dogs to go out of that order, right? Looking for visual cues. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes first, yeah, before anything else, then auditory. And then sometimes we throw in this scent stuff like it's a like a reward or something.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that's just not how dogs learn. So when we get into the communication styles and the languages that dogs like naturally learn, the reason why all dogs can or why we can use food luring so successfully is because of that scent strength.
Yeah.
And then we can build in some auditory cues and get the dog to kind of understand. And then we can finally give them some visual cues. And if we build off of that, we use the dog's natural like strengths for the dog's benefit.
Yep.
So that's what we're going to break down tonight. Our first point is that dogs follow. So by the way that I just explained it, dogs follow what they see, not what they hear. Now that might not be what you want, but it's typically what is conditioned in a normal household. And so, your posture, your movements, like the energy that you communicate with your dog, it translates a lot more than just your commands. And a lot of times owners will jump in and be like, all of the sudden to the dog, right? Not to us. We understand kind of like the sequence of events here, but a dog is just chilling out, relaxing, thinking about that squirrel that they really want to chase eventually here. And then all of a sudden we jump in with, you know, Fido, come. And they're like, wait, what? That, why, how, what's going on? So how can we do better than that, right? How can we do better than just surprising them with a random command?
Right.
That's kind of what we're talking about tonight. So when we get into the actual training of a dog, let's use something super easy like sit. All right. That's usually in our experience, sit is like the number one thing that people immediately go to, because all dogs, like for their owners to feel like their dog is smart, they have to be able to sit.
Yeah.
I don't know why sit
is
sit is the requirement, right? The next one is shake, right?
Yeah, always. Everybody wants their dog to shake.
Everyone wants their dog to sit and shake. it's not the perfect order, but it is the most common that I see. So we're going to talk about sit. When we teach a dog to sit, you need to ask yourself, is the dog a dog that can sit? Once you teach them that, is the dog sitting because you said sit? Really?
Right.
Or is the dog sitting because you bent over towards them?
Right.
Or is the dog sitting because you raised your hand up?
Yeah.
Is the dog sitting because you have a treat and you held it over their head, mm-hmm. and that gives them the best vantage point of the treat to see which way it's going to go?
Right.
Right. So when you start asking yourself that and you start kind of dialing that in, you might find that the answer to that question is not what you think.
Right. Because if you just stand there like a plank and don't move your hands, your head, do anything, and just say, sit, does your dog sit? Because if not, your dog doesn't know what sit means.
Right.
It's following something else that you do along with the sit.
Yes. And my point that I made earlier here about the mismatch in cues versus the strength of those sense or senses is that we typically condition a dog to be more visual and rely more on their vision, which is third ranked down in their like the strength of their senses.
Yeah.
But we teach them that their vision should be the strongest.
Yeah.
And so what that does is, one, it to a certain degree, it doesn't prepare the dog to as confidently interact with you. Mm-hmm. But the second thing that it does is it makes them very visually dependent. And they have these other senses that are really, really, or senses, I keep saying scent, I don't know why. they have these other senses that are really, really strong that we can take advantage of.
Yeah.
Okay. So before we even go into this, what's the right way to do this? When I teach a client about the languages that the dog speaks and the order that we should teach them in, I highly, highly recommend that we teach food luring first, mm-hmm. right? Long before sit, long before shake, just teach your dog. I'm giving you the answer up front before we even really ask the questions here. But but I highly recommend that the first thing that you teach your dog is how to follow food, how to follow and lure to that food. What that does is it's so natural for the dog to follow their nose.
Yep. Always.
So it gives them something that they can do successfully right off the bat that doesn't use any words, and they don't have to rely on their eyes to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why a dog will succeed at it right off the bat.
Yep.
And so it's one of these like very natural cues, natural languages that we can use to train our dogs. get them to start to follow the scent of this yummy treat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The next language is like a placeholder. Okay. So we're gonna come back to this for a second. But the next language is leash pressure that we're going to teach a dog, but not for the reason that you think. The final language that we're going to teach the dog is our verbal cues.
Yep.
Right? And then way down the line, once we get those down, then we start to visually condition the dog with these like hand signals and stuff. We can build off of that. But the first three languages are food luring, leash pressure, and then verbal cues.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've talked about the two on the outside, right? And this Oreo kind of metric here. But this leash pressure on the inside, why do we use the leash pressure? And why is that more important than the verbal?
Oh, me?
I was interested. I'm like asking like someone's going to answer, but I've actually muted all the participants so they can't.
No.
I'm sorry. I'm like staring at you like you're going to answer.
Yeah.
So the reason we use leash pressure is a couple of fold. One, it gives us a nonverbal cue to break through all sorts of other mismatches in language.
Yeah.
And the other really important thing is that leash laws are in effect almost everywhere. You're going to have your dog on a leash at some point. You might as well teach them with a pretty high degree of accuracy how to respond to those leash cues because they're always going to be on a leash.
Yeah,
and so that's why we use that. If you own, you know, 90 acres of property and your dog is never going to be on a leash, it doesn't make sense to teach them leash pressure or any leash skills because they're never going to be on it, right?
Yeah.
So, but in the conversation of, I guess, for our podcast, for Paw Print Academy, we are talking to the normal average dog owner and law-abiding citizen that wants to take their dog to like local dog spots.
Yep.
And so they're going to need to be on a leash. And when they're on a leash, we're going to want them to know how to work with that. So that's why it comes second.
Yep.
Okay. So I don't go too far down the rabbit hole. Now I've explained those three languages and the reason that we teach them in that order is the order of importance and the order of, I guess, the speed at which the dog will typically pick up on those things, right? Touching a dog, which is what we're using as the leash just expands our reach, mm-hmm. right? But touching those tactile cues are going to be much quicker for the dog to pick up on than verbal cues. Verbal cues are hard because they're sound oriented, they're tone oriented, they're volume oriented, right? There's a lot of variables that go in here.
Yep.
And so that's why it's the hardest language for the dog to pick up on and truly understand. Now, I'm not saying that the dogs aren't going to understand it.
Right.
But it is more complicated to them than just following their nose. And it's more complicated to them than just feeling pressure on their body or on their neck if they're wearing a collar or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yep.
Okay. So now we've explained the why and I've given you the answer to the next kind of points here. So by using inconsistent body language, we're going to confuse our dog because even when the words are right, you are using this like inconsistent like body pressure mm-hmm. and dogs communicate through spatial pressure way more than they communicate through anything else.
Yep.
When a dog wants your attention, what do? A lot of dogs just come up and take it, right? They just come up and nudge you, push you, jump in your lap.
Yeah.
You know, jump up on you. A lot of those are the negative ones that we don't want.
Yep.
But that's how a dog communicates because they can't just talk to you and be like, "Hey, Pete, can you give me some pets?" Right? So they're going to communicate through that spatial pressure. And when you see two dogs playing, right? Why do the dogs, they get up super close to each other and their heads go like slightly past each other, right? So their like noses are like past each other and their heads are past each other. Everyone's seen this. Like if you haven't, look up like two dogs playing you know, on YouTube and you're going to see it. They get super close to each other and then they like freeze.
Yep.
But they're right in each other's space. They're right there. And they're like, you can feel the energy building, right? It's that spatial pressure that they're putting on each other to start something. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden one dog breaks it and then phew, off they go.
Yeah.
So we can inadvertently trigger that type of reaction. Not that your dog is going to go off the reservation here, but that we can inadvertently communicate the wrong thing to our dogs if we're not conscious of what we're doing with our body. And that's the whole point here.
Yeah.
So by using confident posture, we can build authority without needing to use constant corrections. Mm-hmm. One of the first things that we see dog owners do, and I'm going to try to pass this off so I don't just monologue here forever, but I've got a lot of points here. One of the first things that we see dog owners do when we take a dog in, we do an in-home integration type training where we keep the dog for a couple of weeks and we train the dog. When we bring it back, we give it to the owners and we teach them how to work with their dog. One of the first things that we see those owners do are like, well, how do I work this?
Yeah.
Like, right? Is it like a... the reins like on a horse, right? It's like, do I snap this? Do I not? And you're like, no, just do what you are doing, because the whole point, what takes the most time is just teaching your dog to just follow your lead.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause if you stand there and you're like moving the leash around and like you're wrapping it and the dog is just standing there, like kind of waiting and like looking for a direction, but they're just, you're standing there. The dog at that point is like, well, what is going on? Like, what are we doing? Even though the dog can't ask you that, the dog is trying to figure out what to do. And if you just walk, the dog's going to get to the end of the leash and go, oh, we're moving now. And the dog's just going to walk with you, because that's what it's looking for, is direction and guidance. And you and that leash are what that exactly is.
Yeah. Yep. So overuse of words can also dilute the impact when your body cues say the opposite thing.
Right. It's like if you're nervous and you're trying to be confident, but like your body is showing that you're nervous. Everybody right, you're like, knows that you're nervous.
Hey, relax, relax, right. relax. You're like, the dog's like, no, no, right. You are not relaxed.
Or if you're like, yeah, I'm fine. But you're sweating and your face is red. It's like, everybody knows you're not fine. It's like trying to fake confidence that you don't have.
So the first like question, and I really want to get to the bottom of this subject because we've kind of danced around it with a couple of these points. What's an example of a client who's, you know, words said one thing and the body language said another? You got one?
Yeah.
I've got a couple. Go ahead.
I have everyone ever. It's like the dog jumping up on you, but you're like bending down with your arms outreached.
Right. And then you're like, no.
Yeah.
No.
No jumping. But you're reaching out and touching the dog while you're saying, no, stop jumping.
Right.
That's the hardest one to understand that you're doing until somebody tells you you're doing that. And then you're like, oh,
right. Cause just cause you're touching your dog, or even if you're like holding them in place, right. I've seen that too, where you're like, someone's like, no, don't jump.
Right.
And they're like holding the dog, not like rough, but like just keeping the dog from jumping by holding them down, but you're touching them.
Right. It's like the hands.
And so the dogs are like, spatial pressure. Yeah. I wanted to be close to you.
Yeah,
exactly.
So excited.
Right. And it's like, well, That's part of your problem.
Yeah.
You're telling them no, but you're giving them what they want.
Right. Kids are the worst at that. It's like they have the magic fingers. The spirit fingers, and they start moving their hands and the dogs are like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. They're like, I can't stop looking at the hands. And it's like, Stop moving your hands. Put them down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crazy fingers.
Okay, so the other one that I was thinking of was inevitably down. When people try to train their dog down, they almost always either point down while they say down.
Yep.
Or they bend over.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. And they're like down, and then they bend over to like get closer to the ground. And when you do that, you're not really teaching the dog what down means. They're watching your body, and then they're like, oh, get low, because he's like getting close.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we're talking about here, is when you run into an issue with like, well, I just don't understand why my dog doesn't seem to listen if I just stay still. And that's the test.
Mm-hmm.
The test of if you are doing this or not, is stand perfectly still. Don't eat, like, just look at your dog, only make eye contact, and then say sit or down or place or whatever it is. And if the dog doesn't do it, then you need to investigate what the real cue is. And there is definitely a difference between like helping your dog along as you're training and testing protocol, right? It's not a problem to build in movement and even reward dogs with movement, right? That can even be a reward. But it's not a problem to use movement as long as you're aware that you're doing it.
Yep.
This, like, I guess, major point here is related to not realizing that you're doing it.
Yep.
And when you don't realize that you're doing it, maybe you're setting yourself back and you're creating more stress and strife for yourself than you even realize that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So isolate those things. The way that I do it when I am, we've talked about markers, right? Episode 3 was all about markers.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was 2. I think it was 2. When we talk about markers, a marker is supposed to mark the exact moment that the dog did what we wanted them to do. If I mark and then reward a dog, I have to remain perfectly still for that moment that I use the marker. Otherwise, I am not clearly loading or charging, is what we call it in the dog training space. I'm not properly charging that marker.
Right.
With the verbal cue, we use yes and free for treat markers. And if I give the dog free at the same time as I move away from them, these dogs that we have conditioned to be visual creatures are going to see the movement and focus on that far and away before they pay attention to the fact that I said free.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so then, and the way that we test it, right? Stand perfectly still, free. That dog should move towards you. And if they don't, well, then you know that you've attached some other sort of meaning or other sort of definition there. So, all right. How do you coach owners to use posture and presence to guide their dog? The way that I do it is I strongly encourage them to stand straight up and not move while they talk, and just count to one and then move. So sit. The dog sits. As soon as their butt hits the ground, I say yes if it's a continuation marker, free if it's a terminal. I say free, and then just a half second pause, and then I move backwards away from the dog, and I then go into my treat pouch in order to get a treat.
Yep.
And that's how I do it. What simple body language adjustment has the biggest impact on leadership? Ooh. I would say hand position.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? Keeping your hands at your side, because dogs also, inevitably, pet dogs are very much conditioned to watch your hands. Yeah. That's where all the good stuff comes from.
Also the taking space when jumping.
Okay.
That's a big one too. It's like once owners start like stepping into dogs that jump, because that's our number one like go-to. Excuse me. That's always our number one go-to, is when a dog jumps, it's like you step forward. And most people naturally and like just instinctually step backwards to let the dog land back on its feet. But that teaches the dog just to jump back into you every time, because they take your space every time. Whereas if you turn around and start stepping into it and kind of pushing them and nudging them back, they learn, man, every time I jump, they take my space away. I'm gonna stop doing that.
Yeah.
Number one way to like help with that.
Right. And that way it also keeps you very, it keeps you very, very high up on the like hierarchy of like ethical training, where you're not doing anything aversive. You're just controlling your own space. And I think that's really, really important.
Yeah.
All right. So point two, tone of voice shapes behavior, and dogs respond to tone before they process the meaning. Mm-hmm. So the way that you say it matters more than the words.
Yep.
So the tone, right? You can be like, no, no.
Right.
Right? But you're like, no. Or no.
Yeah.
Those are all very different.
Yep.
And the tone of voice that you use is important. Now, you can train your dog absolutely to respond to no, no, no. That's fine. You can totally do that. But you have to understand that the tone of voice that you use is very specific to the meaning the dog attaches to it.
Yep.
So consistency is key.
Yeah.
You have to do it the same way every time. I don't care what the tone is. The dog will adjust to it. You can have a strong tone, a weak tone, or whatever tone.
Right.
But I promise you that the dog does not understand the different, or does not understand that no and no mean the same thing.
Right.
To them, it does not.
Yeah.
That's a different word.
Yep.
So you've got to use your tone. You've got to make your tone very consistent. Yep. You can use whatever you want, but just know that it is not the same. It's not just about, we, in English, we have like 97 words to mean the same thing. Mm-hmm. To dogs, the tone of voice that you say each one of those 97 things means a whole nother thing.
Yep. Yeah, there's always like a difference in, and we use tone a lot in like the way we get dogs like excited. Because if we're working with like an excited dog, then in training, we have a lot of time, like more calm tones, more like relaxed, like body postures and things like that, or you're going to amp that dog back up and it's impossible to work with them. Whereas if you have like this low energy, relaxed dog, we have to use more excited tones. We have to like be ecstatic with our movements and be all over the place, because we have to amp that dog up to work with us, or it's going to be like, yeah, you're kind of boring. I don't really want to do that. It's fine.
Yes. Right. And we can adjust the tone, even, I guess what I said earlier, right, that the dog interprets it as a completely different word. I would say that's not 100% true. It doesn't mean that the dog won't still respond to it, but there might respond very differently.
Yeah.
And that's where we use tone. So if I am trying to get the dog to recall away from a squirrel, then that dog has a very high drive and a very high prey drive. I don't think there's a single owner in the world that thinks that come is going to like do it.
Right.
right? Yeah. You've got to get some tone in there. You've got to be more exciting or more serious than the squirrel.
Right.
Right. You have to create a situation where that dog's like, Oh, yeah. I want to go over there instead.
Right. It goes back to like kids, right? If it's like, if your kid's upstairs and you need them to come downstairs and it's like, Hey, and the kid's just like, yeah. And it's like, Hey. And eventually it's like, hey, and they're like, Oh, sorry. That's where your tone changes and the expectation changes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Tone of voice is real big. So high-pitched tones often excite dogs, and like low-pitched, calm tones usually settle them. Not 100%. Every dog is different. But in general, those are things that if I was to call out the average dog, that would be true. Mm-hmm. Angry or frantic tones can create anxiety and resistance in the dog. It can make the dog kind of want to like fight you is a strong word, right? But it can turn on the resistance in the dog's mind that they're like, maybe we're going to have an altercation rather than, oh, cool, I'm just going over there to play a game or get a treat. Mm-hmm. Also on the anxiety side, right? Angry tones and like yelling can absolutely increase anxiety in the dog because they don't have a way to match that tone and that energy. They can't communicate verbally. So that can build some frustration in the dog. Mm-hmm. So we don't ever recommend that you ever yell at the dog. Mm-hmm. Use a strong tone, but use a consistent tone more than anything.
Yeah.
Right. And then the other point that I had written down was consistency in tone builds that trust. And so we kind of already segued into that. So consistency in the tone builds trust and reliability in your commands. And trust, without trust and without the dog believing that like everything is congruent, right? Mm-hmm. That is consistent across the board. That dog's going to ask itself questions that you don't want it to ask. Like, maybe this isn't going to happen this time. Maybe it's not going to be the same as it was last time. Maybe I should do something different. And we don't want to give our dogs the opportunity to like explore those thoughts.
Right.
We just want them to respond consistently. Yep. So how do we explain to owners that dogs hear tone before words? I mean, you just explain it, I guess. I don't have a really, do you have a good example for that one?
No, I mean, it's the difference of like, I'd compare it to like footsteps, right? So if it's like, if you hear somebody walking down the hallway and it's like, right? It's like, that's pretty relaxed.
Okay.
You can kind of tell like, what type of like body language that person's gonna have.
Ooh, I like
that.
But
if you hear somebody going ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch, right? That's more of like, oh, there's somebody like hurrying, they're frantic, right. There's like anxiety there, and there's like absolutely no language going on.
That's actually that is actually a great explanation because you can kind of pick up on the energy of that person.
Right,
without before any, they even get there. Yeah. Right, yeah. But both of the speed, but also the intensity of the footsteps.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the time we rely and go back to like dogs can feel energy at the other end of that leash. And when we bring dogs back from like the in-home integration programs, like you can kind of see it, right? Because we've worked with that dog for like 3, 4, 5 weeks. And when we go out on a walk, we're on a walk, right? And inevitably on walk one of reintegrating them back into the home, it's like kind of messy and the dog is like, what's going on? Where are we? Like there's 4 people now out on this walk and like everybody's looking at me and it looks crazy to start off with. And it's totally normal. The dog is in a different process than what it's been in. And there's not a real practice for going in and teaching the owners other than, hey, we're just going to do it. We're going to get through it. And it's going to get through a couple of passes and you're going to feel a lot more natural. Because like we said at the beginning of this episode, it's like they get the leash back and they're like, how do I work it? Do we put it in drive? Do I put it in like neutral? It's like, how fast do I go? It's like, where do I walk?
Right.
But it's just go. Because what's your dog going to do? It's going to be at the other end of the leash and it's going to be like, oh, we're walking. Right. And then it's just walking with you.
Yeah.
And if you look back at that dog and you go, where are we going? The dog is like, well, I don't know. Like for 3 weeks, somebody told me where I was going. I don't know where we're going. Right. You tell me. Right. And so we just go, just take off. Take off going whichever direction you want to go. You tell us where we're going.
And they're amazed.
Yeah. And the dog's like, oh, okay.
Wait, it just goes with me? It's like, right, yeah. Yep. It's your dog.
And the dog will stop and I'll go, nope, let's go. That's like, I will say let's go more than any other words that I say in like a training like program. Because it is a general go in the same direction with me. And if anybody wants anything from their dog when they are out walking them, it's to move in the same direction as them. Is it move within 6 feet of me? No, not necessarily. I don't really care. But if I'm going right, I want you to be going right. And if you stop and sniff, it's, hey, nope, let's go. We're still walking. Yeah. I didn't stop to sniff anything. I don't need to sniff right now. When we get to somewhere else where we can, then we will go, okay, break.
Right. And when your body language and your tone and your words all align, all of a sudden you get a dog that like learns super quick and they respect your leadership. Right. And so the owners that are like, well, how do I do this? Well, just go.
Yeah.
Right. Just speak confidently. Just tell your dog what you want. Hey, let's go.
Yeah.
Come with me. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we usually try to keep words to a minimum and we try to make the words that we use kind of general, natural words. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's where we use like, let's go a lot because it's just kind of natural. If I was to tell a kid or another person,
right.
How are you going to tell another person that, hey, we're going to walk this way?
Exactly.
There's going to be like, come on, let's go.
Right. If you're like walking through Walmart and your kid goes to touch something in the aisle, it's like, let's go.
Stop it. Let's go.
No, let's go.
Same thing.
Right. It's the same thing.
Absolutely. So mismatched signals slow the learning down, right? And clear signals speed it up. Silent leadership with posture and tone often outperform constant commands. So if you're the owners that we see have the biggest problems are the ones that are trying to use their words to control their dog more than they're just using their body language.
Yeah.
Because your dog doesn't speak English. It doesn't matter if they're in our program for 3 weeks, 5 weeks, 10 weeks, 100 weeks. It does not matter. The dog's still not going to come back speaking English. And so you cannot just come. No, sit. Sit. Right here on the side, heel, turn around, come back, let's go. That's right. Just a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
I would be confused on a leash and I speak English.
Yep.
So instead, right, keep the words to a minimum, use your body language, and just show the dog what you want by going in a direction.
Yeah.
Way more successful.
Yep.
All right. What would you recommend to help owners practice aligning tone, posture, and like their commands and stuff?
I feel like heel is always like a really good one to practice for like teaching body language and like mellowing it out, because it's one of the ones where we build in a lot of movement to teach the dog where we want it, where we do like, we do a lot of guiding them with body language with that one, because we want the dog to come back behind us, circle around, and then come up to our side. And that is not done at all to any degree by standing still from the get-go. And so with that one, that's always one that I encourage people to try doing, like with body language, and then kind of just filtering it out where you start giving them less and less movement and see how far your dog can get, right? It doesn't have to be like this strict training session. Like make it a fun trick and something that you just do with your dog. Yeah. It's just fading out body language and seeing how good your dog can get.
Yeah. And the way that I encourage it is like we work on tone first.
Yeah.
Right. So just get real consistent
yeah.
with you asking for the behaviors or your corrections or whatever it is that it is. Whatever it is, it is. whatever you're telling the dog, say it in the same tone every time.
Yeah.
So that's the first one. We checked that box. Now stand still.
Yeah.
Stand still while you're talking and then move appropriately. And that hits kind of all three.
Yeah.
Just move where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're telling the dog to do something, I guess we kind of muddled these two, right? So there are obedience commands that you're going to say while you're moving, right? That's like heel or hey, let's go, right? You're usually moving while you do mm-hmm. that. So I'm not talking about those specifically. When I say don't move, I mean when you say sit, when you say down. That's right. The big one. Down right, is a real big one. Right, the non-movement
yeah.
ones.
Yeah.
Stand still. Then say down. And then if they don't respond, that's when you add the movement cue.
Yeah.
And then you point. Or then you lure them with food. Or then you give them leash pressure.
Right, because inevitably it's like the person gets frustrated that they have to go down and the dog is like, no. And it's like you have to bend down at that point, especially like smaller right. dogs. It's yep. like those are the ones that are they really important. Back. Yeah, they hurt your back. I'm like, hey, stand up and do that. A lot of the times, like I will work my hardest at trying to use my foot with the leash at that point as like a pulley system and like give them the down with the leash pressure with my foot to avoid bending over so much, because at that point I then teach them down and then I start moving and then they just wait for that body language every single time. So it's always right. a small dog that will learn down is when you bend over and point to the ground or
right.
or
what do she's talking like about that. Is if you put your heel on the ground and you put your toe over the leash, then you can pull up on the leash and it yeah, pulls down hand. On the collar.
Right.
Right. But yep. like all of that, we don't want to just stomp on the dog's leash.
Yeah, yeah.
What exercises? Well, we've talked about that. That was the other question. Sorry, we're getting to the end here. Have you seen a dog improve instantly when an owner fixed their nonverbal signals? I'm trying to think of.
I feel like it's always the leash walking for me, where it's like
it just snaps into place.
Trying to get their dog to walk, and they're pulling in every direction, and it's like, that's weird. They don't do that, but it's like they're walking super slow because they're trying to focus on what the dog is doing, and then they've got the leash inevitably like reeled up into their hand because they're used to carrying the leash like that.
Yeah.
And so the dog is already getting pressure and all these things. And it's like, why are we walking so slow? Where are we going? Which direction? And the owner doesn't know which direction because they're just looking at the dog and waiting to watch it not pull.
Yeah. 100%.
And so when we're like, hey, just let that leash go, hold the end and just go. And immediately the dog is like, oh, I'm walking with you. Okay, we're going. And they're like, oh, that feels so different immediately.
Yeah. So how do you balance verbal cues versus like that silent leadership? Right. Cause there's like times
right.
that you want. Where I draw the line is if the dog's like forging way up ahead.
Yeah.
That's where I'm not going to just silently correct.
Right.
I'm going to full on stop or turn around.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be like, no. And then leash pressure.
Yep.
No should predict that pressure mm-hmm. just like yes predicts a treat.
Yeah.
You have more to add?
Yeah, I think it just really, for me, depends on like the gravity of the situation, whether I'm going to use verbal or not. Also depends on how much stimulus is going on. So like when I take Gabe out in public, he's super fearful, gets overstimulated really easy for him. Like I just turn off verbally and I just use his leash. And I'm just giving him like pressure to go into a sit, pressure to go into a down. And I just cut out verbals because at that point it's just going to be added static into all the crazy like static that's in his brain. And so we just go straight to pressure and he's like, yeah, okay, sit. Yep. Okay. Down. And he just knows what I'm asking at that right point.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to define it.
Yeah. I really just think it depends on the situation and really, really what's going on.
All right. Listener project. So every podcast, I give you guys two listener projects where it's basically like homework that you can try to apply to your dog at home for anybody listening. Project number one, silent leadership walk. So you're going to take your dog on a short walk and using body movement and leash guidance only, no verbal cues. So notice how your posture and your pace influence the dog's position and their focus on you. Mm-hmm. You may become a lot more interesting to your dog if you walk faster.
Right. That's what I encourage people to like look at is like, what is the natural pace of your dog? Every dog has a natural pace. And if your dog is like a long-legged like Australian Shepherd, they're known for like walking naturally like faster. If you are just walking at like 2 miles an hour and that dog's natural pace is 10.
When you said a long-legged, I was not thinking Australian Shepherd.
I know.
You switched gears on me.
I did. Right. I was going to go but somewhere
Australian
else,
but Shepherd, not really a long-legged dog, but right, do, really. But they do walk fast.
Right. Okay, it's like continue. A Doberman, you know? Yes. It's like they have a long gait, and so naturally they're going to walk faster. So if you're like at a crawl, that dog is naturally going to be like, man, this is boring. They're going to start right. getting stressed because they don't want to walk that slow. And you're going to have to find other ways to kind of gain some movement with your dog in that way, whether it's like back and forth and building more movement into that walk. But there's got to be for sure something that's done because a dog that can't walk that slow is never going to enjoy that walk or get what it needs.
Yeah, definitely. So and the last piece to that. So just add praise with a calm voice once the dog matches your movement, right? So like while they're doing the right thing, just be, hey, good job. Good.
Yeah.
And that's it. Don't reach down and pet. Don't like change things up. Don't even reward with food. Mm-hmm. Just a nice calm. Good. Just let them know that they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
But then play with it. See if that doesn't improve some things between you two. Project number two, tone training. So pick three tones, calm praise, like a firm correction type of tone of voice, and a neutral like delivery between like commands. Mm-hmm. Right? So one calm, one firm, and one somewhere in the middle. And then practice short drills where you use the tone only to influence the behavior. Pair it with simple commands like sit and down, things that your dog already knows. Don't try to train them with a new thing while you're trying to experiment with this. Mm-hmm. Something that your dog already knows. And then reward the dog for responding correctly to the tone and the body cues together. So that is our two projects there. So at this point, I am going to unmute our participants, there we go, or at least allow them to unmute. And then this is the chance that everyone has to ask questions. So if anybody has any questions, now is your chance. Question and answer time. Nothing, Heidi.
There you go.
I'm ready for it.
Okay, I was listening to your music. Michael.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I just thought it would be funny to use it.
It's funny because we was watching Jeopardy tonight, and I told Heidi, I said, we might order to record that for
yeah, it's for the perfect.
Podcast. One of the things that we've done with Maverick, which was probably wrong, was we taught him to sit, and then we taught him to down, and now he will sit and then automatically go down.
Okay.
So how do we get him to do one or the other without doing both at the same time?
Okay. So this is a great question. So when we're training pet dogs, a lot of times we have to ask the question, let me rephrase it differently. So a lot of owners wish that their dog would just go to a down. And so a lot of times we don't correct dogs that auto down because it's still a positive behavior. Now, if you don't want your dog to go down, then you can use your body language and your body pressure in order to prevent that. And so what that would look like is we use a food lure to sit, right? And so we bring the food up and their head comes up to follow the food and their butt goes down. At that point, I can step towards the dog so that I'm very close to them and they can't slide into that down. And then I can reward, and show the dog that, hey, look, you're sitting, you're doing the right thing. Here's all these rewards because you're continuing to do it.
Okay.
But also, I want to mention that when we, a lot of the times in the homes that we kind of work in, you're looking at like doing it with a dog on a hardwood floor a lot of the times. So if that is the case with this, I always see dogs that just naturally slide into a down because it is hard for them to hold a sit position on a surface that's kind of slippery. So if he is doing it on a hardwood floor, I would also look at that as one of the things. And we always will end up like rolling out like a rug to kind of train dogs on because they will sit for a lot longer than if they are on like a harder surface where it's a little bit more difficult.
There's a couple other little tricks that you can use. You can have the dog sit on a smaller platform that they don't have enough room to like down on. So if you like had a little square like platform or something, you can have him hop up there where he can kind of stand on all fours and he can like pull his butt down to the ground and sit on it, but he can't really lay down on it. And that is another way that you can break that auto down. But once again, I'll throw out there that most pet owners like the auto down. And so it just comes down to like, is there a reason you don't want him to go down? Because down is usually a more relaxed position. And anytime we can get a dog to relax more, it's usually better. But that doesn't mean that you don't want to differentiate that. It really just comes down to owner preference.
Right. Now, when we get ready to take him outside and have him to sit before he goes outside, he won't lay down. He'll just sit. And he'll sit there and he'll wait when you tell him stay and you walk outside and tell him free, he'll come out.
Very nice.
But if you go in the kitchen or come in here with a treat in your hand and he sees it, he automatically sits and goes down.
Gotcha. So that sounds like he's trying to predict what behavior you want in order to win the reward.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so sometimes we see dogs will perform or exhibit like multiple behaviors. They'll like, I'll sit and then I'll down and then I'll roll over and then I'll give a paw and then I'll spin around in a circle or whatever it is. They're like, I know you've got a treat.
They just start
offering behaviors in order to try to get it. And so sometimes what you can do is you can block that by just being like, you know, sit. And then as soon as he goes down, just no. And that's it, right? Just no, that's incorrect. Right. And then you could move a little bit. So he moves with you, get him back into a sit, and then yes. And then you use that tone of voice that we were just talking about to reinforce, yes, that's the right thing. And if he auto downs, no, that's the wrong thing.
Okay. One of the biggest problems we're having with him is when he gets something in his mouth to get him to drop what's in his mouth, we have to pry his mouth open. He caught a rabbit, a baby rabbit last week.
Oh, Lord.
But, I mean, he's got a real soft mouth. He got one of Heidi's eggs off out of a chicken coop and run around the yard with it, never broke it till we got it out of his mouth. But he does not want to release something once he gets it in his mouth.
Have you had any success with trading him something else of high value?
Yes. He's got a one-track mind.
Okay. All right. So, right. And so he comes to us on the first, right?
Correct.
So, right. So we will.
How did he get to a baby rabbit? Did he catch it?
He was.
That's impressive.
The rabbit had a little nest with a little rabbits out here in the field behind the house.
Gotcha. Yeah, you have a lot of land.
And, yes. Oh. He went out there and grabbed hold of the rabbit.
So we will. So this starts at a more basic level than just, hey, just let this go. And it's going to start by us teaching him to get things and then also to come back to us for rewards. And we're going to build that pattern up until it's really exciting. That whole event of like going and getting something and then bringing it back or just returning back to us. We're going to build enough excitement with that that it becomes a pattern. Then we'll give him something to go get that is that's not just food, right? So that he goes and he gets it. And then as he brings it back, his pattern is to come back to us for the thing that we're going to give him, right? Is we're going to start with a treat. And what that reinforcement does is he's going to naturally be more prone to let that object go because he's been reinforced to, I go and get this thing, I get a treat over there, and then I come back to you and I get a treat over here. And by repping out that pattern, we can start to incorporate him releasing something before he even realizes that like he has it and we don't.
Okay.
So there's a whole bunch of little nuances that we can do to help that. But okay. Being that it's only like 6 days or so before we get an opportunity to jump in there. I don't know that I don't have any magic ways for you to just, if he's not willing to just take like get a treat instead or trade you for like a toy or something, those are like the most basic and the easiest things to recommend. Aside from that, we're probably going to have to do some reconditioning and to mm-hmm. get him excited to participate in more of pack drive and less prey drive of like, I've got this.
Right. It goes back to like the him playing the keep away game. Right. So it just has to go back mm-hmm. to like relationship building where he would rather bring it to you and give it to you than to have you chase him around after it.
Right. Because we're going to improve his pack drive and his desire to want to hang out with you and be with you.
Great.
And we're going to work with lots of TV remotes.
Well, he went in my room a while ago. Well, it hadn't been no more than an hour ago, and I left some money on the dresser, and he come walking through the house with a $5 bill in his mouth.
Oh, no.
Right, which shows me that he just really wants attention from it, because if not, he would just eat it.
Right. He but knows he it's more valuable it. Yeah, if he brings
like,
it to you.
Look what I have.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
All right. Anybody else have any questions before we wrap this up tonight? All right. We are going to start wrapping it up then. So tonight we talked about body language and tone, how communicating more than just our words is really, really important. And how we use our body language is just as important, right? Try your best to condition your dogs to work in that order of scent and then hearing and then visual. And that will just help pacify a lot of those stressors in the house. For tonight, that's all I've got. So thank you for tuning in. Highly recommend if you're listening to this, you've downloaded it, leave us a like, leave us a comment, leave us a review. Thank you for tuning in. And that's all I've got for tonight.
All right. Good night.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.